We like to do things by the numbers. We're all about commerce and community. Welcome to The Upswing, presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now for the host that's always on The Upswing, Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, Milwaukee. Happy Tuesday. 1 week to go, 1 week out from Election Day. Obviously, most of us are already feeling a little too many political ads coming at us. My social feeds are feeling it, too. Just full of it from all sides, all candidates. Oddly, I've already voted, so data and targeting may not always be the best when it comes to digital advertising, but... You know, I also got six robocalls last night. I don't know what number on your phone that is up to, but I'm on the do not call list, but the robocalls keep coming fast and furious to my phone. A couple numbers, the Harris and Trump campaigns combined to spend $265 million in the last reporting period, which was October 1st through October 16th, and the main pro-Harris super PAC plus... The four main pro-Trump super PACs spent roughly an additional $260 million. Today, we're going to talk political advertising a bit with a media professor from the University of Minnesota, Christopher Terry. Chris knows the ins and outs of political advertising really well, and his research has been cited by the FCC and in filings with the U.S. Supreme Court. We'll talk to Chris after the first break. On a more festive note, maybe a little later in the show, we're going to talk to John Wise. John is the vice president of food and beverage at Marcus Hotels and Resorts. We'll check in on holiday corporate events and we'll preview a couple upcoming events at Marcus. But first, as we do each and every morning on The Upswing, let's go to up.
Now is time for the
1, 2, 2.
Up on The Upswing.
$100 million of improvements coming to New Berlin. ABB, a manufacturer in the electrification and automation space, is opening a new $100 million campus at 182nd and Lincoln Avenue in New Berlin today. The move is going to increase U.S. production capacity of industrial electric drives and services, and the new campus will welcome more than 700 ABB employees and is expected to add an additional 100 new jobs over the next 3 years. Local officials and community leaders, education leaders are gathering actually right now for a ceremony and ribbon cutting that began at 10 a.m. The increased footprint and new facility will better serve ABB's projected growth. Highly automated production facility will be complemented by a digital customer experience center and a state-of-the-art innovation lab to better serve customers in the United States. They're going to relocate a warehouse distribution center to the campus, too. ABB will reduce its transportation costs and associated emissions with this new project. Second up, Coffee Wars. I often say that I'm an equal opportunity drinker of coffee and go to several different local and national places, but I realize that everyone competes for our coffee business, right? So I was really interested to get the weekly email from Stone Creek Coffee this week. It discussed just this topic, coffee competition. Let me read a bit from it. It's really, really interesting. A couple of weeks ago, Stone Creek says, we wrote in this newsletter about how Stone Creek compares to Starbucks. In our social comings and goings, we also tend to get asked about our relationship with Colectivo. Are we friendly with them? Are we enemies? Fair questions from anyone who loves coffee and lives in and around the Milwaukee area. The honest answer to those questions is probably less juicy than you expect. It certainly wouldn't make for great reality TV content. Our relationship is amicable, yet distant. Make no mistake, we see Colectivo as our primary local competition, but we don't harbor any kind of ill will towards the organization. This is certainly not a war. The personal relationships are always kind and caring, but we don't have an MKE coffee coalition of sorts. We compete in the grocery aisle. We compete in the corporate business. We sometimes compete for your in-person patronage. having cafes in close proximity to each other. But we don't spend a whole lot of time thinking about what Colectivo is doing. We're sure the reverse is also true. While we see them technically as a competitor, we don't believe their success would in any way hinder our success. They go on to say, we're proud of our B Corp certification. We're proud of our coffee. We're proud of how we operate as an organization. But if we lived as citizens in Milwaukee without Stone Creek, we'd be very glad to have you down to have a cup of coffee at Colectivo. So I love the choices. I love the intentionality of this type of corporate messaging, the branding, the positioning. So kudos to Stone Creek. Let's continue to rise all coffee tides in our market. Everyone's competing for our dollar. Everyone is going to get better with more and more competition. All right, this is The Upswing. We are presented by Horicon Bank. When we come back, let's talk political advertising. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Political advertising doesn't ever seem to stop. It will be everywhere over the next week, that's for sure, especially here in the state of Wisconsin. And many of the ads will be attack ads. Ads that are for something don't really seem to work, while ads that are against something are still the way of the day, for sure. I wanted to talk about the state of political advertising and found Christopher Terry, who lives in Milwaukee and Minneapolis and is the associate professor and fellow of journalism, law, and policy at the Hubbard School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Minnesota. Professor Terry took the time out of his day yesterday to give us his insights. He's an authority on internet policy and political advertising, and his research has been cited by the FCC and in filings with the U.S. Supreme Court. Professor, I appreciate your time this morning. So as you look at the political landscape, we are 1 week out, and the messaging against has just been so prolific on both sides and clearly preferred over messaging in favor of. Is this just what we're used to now in political advertising and it's just never going to change?
Well, you have to remember there's two kinds of political advertising. There's the kind that comes from the campaigns themselves. That tends to be fairly more positive than the other kind, which is the advertising by outside groups. And part of the intent of the volume of advertising is not to convince people to vote one way or the other, but to not go to the polls in general. And that's been happening for a long time now. And here in Wisconsin, which is a perpetual battleground state with off-year elections to boot, you know, we get a full dose of it every time.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, you know, obviously we don't see a ton of attacks. You see some taste testing maybe here or there in consumer advertising, but is there a reason why we're not seeing any type of attack ads in traditional advertising?
Well, political speech and commercial speech are fundamentally different. Yeah. You can say things in political speech, you know, protected First Amendment speech, that you couldn't get away with saying about somebody's competing product in an in a commercial speech or an advertising situation. Product disparagement is a big deal and is the kind of thing that's taken very seriously. But remember that commercial speech, advertising, traditional commercial advertising, isn't protected by the First Amendment in the same way that traditional political speech, or in the current discussion, political advertising is.
Yeah. It's funny. I saw, maybe you've seen it the other day, a Burger King ad that said, work for a king, not for a clown. We're hiring. I thought that was pretty creative. A little bit of a competitive slap, but at the same time, got the message across.
Well, Burger King has historically had some pretty good ad people who've really been plugged into sort of the zeitgeist of what's going on. And they are pretty good at making jokes. As you are probably aware, it's hard to make a good joke often. Mm-hmm. Burger King does and historically has been better at that than other major companies.
Yeah, for sure. All right. In terms of the volume of political ads, it's going to be fast and furious in this final week for sure. What impact does that have on local businesses that are running ads adjacently on the same platform. Do you get a sense of that impact at all?
Sure. It's something I've studied for many years. The most important part is to understand that the two ads create a different situation. Ads that come from federal candidates, legally qualified federal candidates, they have to run. Stations like TMJ or any of the television stations in town, they have to run those ads. They don't have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't censor those ads in any way. The other kind of ads, though, the non-candidate political ads, usually called issue ads, those are not protected by the same rules, the rules that are 90 years old that govern candidate ads. And as such, stations are able to sell those ads for top dollar. The typical going rate for a candidate ad versus an issue ad is about a 10 times factor. Sometimes it's even 20 times, depending on where you are. That means that the stations themselves are making a lot of money on this, but the volume does push some of the regular commercial advertisers off the air. In Minnesota in 2022, the local news stations were running so many political ads the last week of the election that they were actually reducing the amount of news time that they were putting in a half-hour television newscast to accommodate additional ads. And it is hard for commercial advertisers to get in, one, because candidate ads have to run and they can bump commercial advertising off the air, and two, stations want all the issue money that they can because there's sort of a fixed date on when that issue money goes away.
Yeah. And do you get a sense that, hey, you're in Minneapolis and Milwaukee, kind of split your time, do you get a sense that local businesses are just saying, all right, I'm going to take some time out of local media right now and let the campaign season do its thing, and then I'll get back to the promotion?
Well, I think that that's whether they've actively or inactively come to that conclusion. I think it's just a practical reality at this point that unless you're one of the top dollar advertisers on a station, whether that be TV or radio or mm-hmm. to a lesser degree through a cable head end, that you just have to sit it out for the 45 and 60 day windows before the primaries and the generals at this point. It's just, there's that much advertising.
Yeah.
The problem in Wisconsin, of course, is that we have that same level of advertising in off-year elections. The state Supreme Court race last year, of course, was a wall-to-wall advertising bonanza, too.
Yeah.
So it used to be that you only had this problem every 45 to 60 days every 2 years, but the reality in Wisconsin, being the state that it is that it's all the time, right? We'll have spring elections for a series of races. So even after we survive the presidential race, we'll have another batch of pretty hardcore advertising again very, very soon.
Yeah, seemingly a never-ending cycle for sure. So as campaigns look at the effectiveness in this final week, how are campaigns tracking and monitoring the effectiveness? Is it just all about volume at this point, playing the percentages?
Well,
what's like? Campaigns, do they look at the impressions and the clicks and the reach at this point, or is it just about blanket the market and go after it?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, all advertising is targeted in some way or another, but you're at the end of a campaign where you've got money to spend, so you're better off throwing it in and seeing what happens than holding on to the money afterwards. You know, again, Wisconsin's always going to be a close state, I mean, at least until the demographics of the state change in a fundamental way. And I look this morning, we're looking at, just on the Milwaukee television stations, you're looking at close to $350,000 in more ads that'll run in the next week. And that's just the reality of the situation at this point.
Yeah. Is there a... Are you seeing a winning ad platform in this campaign season that's different than years before?
No, the numbers have shifted a little bit. Advertising on the internet's obviously picking up just by a volume, but internet advertising is very inexpensive in relative terms to television and radio. TV for a long time has always been sort of the big beneficiary of this. In fact, 4 or 5 years ago, prior to COVID, there was an effort to buy up a bunch of television stations by many of the sort of media conglomerates to get in on the 2020 the expected 2020 political wave money. Mm-hmm. And this year, the breakdown's about 72% of all of the ad spend went to broadcast TV, just because it's a very expensive place to advertise.
Yeah.
Not that there are any more ads on TV, it's just that the price of those ads is substantially higher than in other venues.
And then finally, Professor, as you go back and forth between Minneapolis and Milwaukee, are you seeing a difference in the ads in your social feeds in terms of volume?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's amazing when I'm in Milwaukee with my family, the volume of ads one sees in comparison to Minnesota. Remember, Minnesota, not a very competitive state politically.
Mm-hmm.
Even down ballot, there's only one House race in the state that's even considered marginally competitive. Both states have U.S. Senate races, but the Senate race in Minnesota is not considered even remotely competitive. And even with that, you still see a lot of ads, but it's nothing compared to what you see in Wisconsin. And that's been true for 15 or 20 years at this point.
All right. I appreciate your time this morning. I only got 6 robocalls last night, so I'm hoping tonight maybe that will only be 5.
Well, good luck with that. I suspect the next week will be pretty interesting in terms of the quantity of ads. And then it's kind of like Christmas music, right? It'll just end sometime next week.
Very good. All right. Enjoy the rest of your week. Appreciate your time.
No problem. Have a great day.
Thank you. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, the Tuesday show. Always interested in the state of our hospitality industry here in Greater Milwaukee. John Wise is the Vice President of Food and Beverage at Marcus Hotels and Resorts. John joins us in studio this morning. John, I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So I said before the break, on Friday, we were at the Bucks game downtown. After the game, kind of took a walk through downtown, stopped in at St. Kate. DJ playing, really lively scene, press club event upstairs. It seemed like there were a lot of locals there, and I don't know if that was necessarily the case a couple years ago, but it seems like kind of the locals are flocking back to the hotel bar scene.
Well, I certainly agree with you. I can tell you, obviously, the two COVID years, 20 and 21, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
But the last 3 years, 22, 23, and 24 have been like record-breaking years for Marcus Hotels and for the industry in general.
Yeah.
In any good city, New York, Chicago, Milwaukee, I've noticed that the better hotels become part of the fabric of the local community. People celebrate there. They have their weddings there. They have their corporate parties there. And now having these really active bars in the lobby, it's a whole nother thing.
Yeah. And you get that really good mix, I think, when you walk into a great hotel bar. That you see locals, but then you see people from out of town, and you're able to just have those creative conversations that help build community. And I don't know, for me, like that's what I love about the hotel bar space.
No, you're right. And they're typically a lot bigger, and there's a lot more environment and atmosphere. It's not a club. It's not completely a bar. It's something different.
Yeah.
I love the vibe at St. Kate. You know, everybody who checks in gets a glass of champagne. And I remember seeing once there was this elderly lady walking away from the desk carrying her champagne glass in one hand, headed for the elevator, dragging her suitcase along, spilling on the concrete. And I go, it's awesome.
That's just right. Awesome.
Embrace it.
Yes, indeed. So what are some of the bigger challenges or some of the new challenges now in the hospitality industry? Obviously, a lot more competition. And how are you moving to adapt to them?
Well, first of all, there's a ton of new hotels everywhere, but a lot of these hotels are what we call limited service. They might have breakfast, and that's about it. Food and beverage is not easy, but it's something that Marcus has always been involved in. The family, obviously their history with Big Boy and restaurants and theaters, they see things a little bit differently, and that's why we're called to not only run our own hotels, but to manage other people's hotels as mm-hmm. well. So the challenge continues for us in food and beverage is finding great people.
Yeah.
Because they have a lot of choices now.
And what are the price pressures? I mean, obviously, you know, costs continue to go up on, right, on all levels, and you got to incorporate the infrastructure and the people into that.
Right. And you can only, you know, at some point you just can't raise prices anymore, right? You have to eat that at a point. And inflation was really bad for a while, and food was one of the last kind of things to go down, but it has moderated. Mm-hmm. But we're definitely not looking at increasing any prices.
Yeah. And as you look at trends, if you will, I mean, it's still kind of on point that luxury, wellness, and sustainability, are those kind of the three paths in the hospitality industry that are still growing?
Yeah, well, I think it's, you know, as I said earlier, it's community as well. Luxury for sure in our hotels. The spas at Pfister and Grand Geneva are constantly booked.
Mm-hmm.
The afternoon tea at the Pfister, a very kind of a hoity-toity fun thing. We've tripled the amount of business we've done in the last 2 years there, so that's a really good thing, too. Mm-hmm. And sustainability, I don't know that people ask for it, but they appreciate it when they see it.
Yeah.
And when they see we're careful on how we break down our waste and how we serve our food and beverage, that's important.
How about talent acquisition and retention? It's a pretty competitive labor market,
very,
especially in that restaurant space. I think there's always another option where you can make a little bit more, and people, right, are always evaluating their options. How, right, is that on your end?
Well, you know, we're fortunate. We have a lot more resources than the typical place. So we have better benefit packages, insurance, movie tickets, mm-hmm, things like that. The culture is really good. The stability of working for a company that's not going to go away. And, you know, the family history is a big thing, too. And, you know, Greg plays piano in St. Kate once a week, and Blue once a week, too.
Yeah. All right. When we come back, more with John Weiss from Marcus Hotels and Resorts, the holiday event business. I want to get his take on our big corporate parties back. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined by John Weiss, Vice President of Food and Beverage at Marcus Hotels and Resorts. John, what are you seeing in terms of the return of the big corporate party? Are you seeing corporations make investments for those holiday parties that, you know, just hundreds, maybe 1,000 people in a hotel ballroom? Are you seeing a return of those events?
There's definitely some of those parties. Yeah. I think even before COVID, they were kind of on the wane. What's a little bit more typical might be like small departments going out for lunch, mm, or in smaller things. So we have really great medium-sized spaces and some smaller spaces in addition to the big ballrooms. And again, everything at the hotels is decorated so beautifully for the holidays.
Yeah. All right. Very good. So you have a couple big events coming up. One of my local favorite places is Boswell Books on Downer Avenue. Always really cool activations with authors and fun events there. And they take a lot of their events with authors kind of outside the walls of the bookstore and do them at locations like yours.
Yeah, I've been doing events with Daniel Golden at Boswell for years, and he does bring in the best people, and he's one of the last independent bookstores that really should be supported.
Yeah.
So he reached out to us, and he has, you know, Milwaukee is the most German of all the cities in the U.S. The Pfister was owned and built by German immigrants, and our corporate chef, Mark Weber, is German.
Hmm.
So when he said, hey, we got Louisa Weiss, German food expert with a cookbook on classic German food, do an event tomorrow, Wednesday, at the Pfister Hotel, we were all in.
And Louisa's new book actually comes out today. So it's
so we get her at the start of her tour.
Classic German Cooking is a collection of more than 100 of the best recipes from German and Australian home cooks. And like you said, the Marcus executive chef, Mark Weber, will pair with her and talk about all the beauty of German cooking. Where can people get information about tickets for this event?
It's on the Pfister website. If, okay, you go to events and you can click on it. It's selling pretty quickly, actually. And I'm not lying, it is really.
All right, that's good.
And don't forget the great white German wines are fantastic, too, with that.
Always pair it with the right wine, for sure. So if you look, I don't know if you can see it from the street view, but on top of the Hilton in downtown Milwaukee, on top of the parking garage is what?
Hives.
Hives.
Robert McEnany has Got his own little beekeeping operation, and he tends hives all over the city.
Okay.
And so, and he shares the honey with us. So this is the second year in a row we are doing our barrel and bees dinner. We're doing bourbon-infused foods, honey-infused foods, and we'll start the party inside the Monarch Lobby, where he'll bring down some of the bees and some of their hives that people can see, have some appetizers, and then go into the Chop House and have a great four-course dinner.
All right. Yes, the beautiful Milwaukee Chop House inside the Hilton City Center downtown, Barrels and Bees. That event is Friday, November 8th.
That's correct. Yeah.
And so all the honey that is made atop the parking garage, is that sourced and then used at all the restaurants at Marcus?
Well, no, just strictly at the Hilton.
Just at the Hilton?
At the Chop House.
Okay.
You know, he takes some, we take some, and it's a very good partnership.
All right. Very good. John Weiss is the Vice President of Food and Beverage at Marcus Hotels and Resorts. Appreciate your time this morning and all the best as we enter in the beautiful holiday season.
Thank you.
All right. When we come back, a quick update on what's on your ballot next Tuesday. And then we're going to do Try, Take, Buy. This is The Upswing. We're presented by Horicon Bank. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, preparing you for Election Day next Tuesday. WTMJ's Adam Roberts has a first of four segments called What's on My Ballot. We'll prepare you for all those different initiatives that you'll see on your ballot next Tuesday.
That free voice is the vote.
We're nearly to Election Day 2024, but in reality, the election has already been underway for some time, as early in-person absentee voting kicked off for many Wisconsin communities on October 22nd. Early turnout has been quite robust, with over 412,000 of those in-person absentee votes already cast. For those who still haven't voted, over the next few days, we'll walk you through the ins and outs of what you can expect on your ballot when you head to the polls.
Your vote is one of the most valuable tools.
Let's start, ironically, towards the bottom of the ballot, where you'll notice any referenda up for a vote in your municipality. First off, all ballots across Wisconsin will include a question concerning who can legally vote in state elections.
Shall Section 1 of the Article 3 of the Constitution, which deals with suffrage, be amended to provide that only a United States citizen age 18 or older who resides in an election district may vote in an election for national, state, or local office or at a statewide local referendum?
On the surface, the change is simply rewriting the law to read only instead of every, since no cities, towns, or villages in Wisconsin currently allow non-citizens to vote in local elections. The non-citizen voting referendum is the fifth statewide ballot question in Wisconsin this year alone. Also on the ballot this fall are several high-profile school referenda, continuing a trend of districts going to the voters for approval on spending projects. This November, around 140 school districts in Wisconsin will ask voters to consider ballot items. Data from the February and April referendums show around 60% of those ballot measures passed. In Madison, voters are being asked for more than $600 million to cover operating costs and building replacement and renovations in the district.
They asked for money for the schools. I always gave it to them, but I always really wondered what the hell they were doing with it.
Madison School Board Treasurer Allie Muldrow tells WISC-TV while she's not surprised to hear those remarks, given voter fatigue over the increasing number of referenda.
As a homeowner in Madison, I don't think anybody wants their life to get more expensive. At the end of the day, we are defined by the way we show up for one another's kids.
Meanwhile, in Wauwatosa, another duo of funding requests asks voters to approve nearly $125 million for the same purpose.
Is a really great thing for our community, and I'm really excited about what it means for the future of our schools.
Our children deserve the best and brightest leaders around. However, irresponsible spending is not a way to get there.
As always, make sure to do your research on any referenda coming up for a vote in your municipality before you head to the polls. Adam Roberts, WTMJ News.
All right, no matter what, do not forget to exercise your civic duty and vote next Tuesday, or vote right now in early voting. Let's go. Try, take, buy. Try, I got something you need to try. If you need a new show for this winter, I truly recommend The Diplomat on Netflix. Now, the standard Netflix model, $6.99 with ads, $6.99 per month. But The Diplomat is a wonderful show. It stars Carrie Russell. She plays this war-hardened diplomat turned ambassador to the United Kingdom. She's married to her former ambassador. There's all this ripped from the headline stuff. There's partnership. There's argument. There's political schemes. There's relationships. It's kind of all tumbled into one. A really great show. So if you need a new show to try, try The Diplomat. My take, I have always wanted to see more and more innovation from the tours at Miller Valley. So kudos to Molson Coors for exploring expansion of its Miller Brewery tours after introducing two new additions this past year. The Business Journal had an update on this story yesterday. But in May, the Milwaukee Brewery added two. They added an hour archives tour and then a two-hour historical tour options to its offerings. I've really enjoyed seeing this, kind of adding an additional flavor, some more texture to the background of what the brewery is all about. The hope was to offer these tours more in 2025 if interest continues to show promise. Now, there's a little extra cost for these tours, but as I said, it's more than just the standard tour through the brewery. You get a really good deep dive into some of the brewery's archives that date all the way back to Miller Brewing's founding in 1855. Put it on your list for sure. My buy, and a little bit of a tease for tomorrow, women's basketball tickets. 2024-25 pricing is out for whether it's UWM, El Verno, Marquette. You can get season tickets to see the Marquette women in the lower chairback reserved for $100 for the entire season. That's $10 per game. General admission season tickets are only $50, $5 for a game. Women's basketball is where it's at. Truly, truly entertaining, competitive. Tomorrow, we'll hear from new Marquette women's coach, Kara Katsurga. She'll join us on the upswing with Mark Cass, and we'll do the business of sports tomorrow.
These are your business headlines from the Milwaukee Business Journal.
Vito Advisors acquires Mequon-based Pegasus Partners. The deal is expected to close in about 4 to 8 weeks. Financial terms of the acquisition were not disclosed. Johnson Controls opens its $36 million engineering lab in Glendale. The 105,000-square-foot lab has about 250 employees working on-site since becoming fully operational Monday. Legendary Milwaukee Brewers announcer Bob Uecker addresses retirement speculation. The 90-year-old told CBS Sunday morning he doesn't know what his life would be without baseball. I'm Logan Hansen for MilwaukeeBusinessJournal.com on 620 WTMJ.